Well, to continue on this second tape, when they start talking about air brakes and conductors and all the safety code that you'd have to meet on a standard railroad, as I say, I threw up my hands. But these were just a little old pin and coupling type of cars connected together with just a little piece of scrap iron with a hole in each end of it and a pin dropped through it. And we got along fine over there, but at this day and age, whether they still permit it for passengers to be carried or not, I don't know. But here is another point that I want to leave with your committee that they could start working on. You know, this man was up from the Centennial, or from the Century 21, and told us how they raise money down there. And I have talked this over with the Park Board and with the Historical Society. And I have found no objections in any manner, shape, or form that if, when the Centennial is over with, if it hasn't paid for itself, there would be no objection whatever to pay admission to these different displays. Say the steamer Nenana, man that wanted to put that in there, if you owed him a few $100 yet on his investment, you could charge admission onto that boat to see this wonderful library of pictures and history of all the early day steamers on the Yukon River until he was paid off, and likewise with all the other exhibits. And when this Century 21 man told us about the way they raised money, that they got pledges out of every company in town, from $1,000 to $50,000, they told him they wouldn't get a penny of it back, just to write it off and forget it as a loss. But in the end, they were very happy to be able to pay every single man back every dollar and made some money besides. And I feel that the Centennial here in Fairbanks can do the same thing if they go to every company in the town and get them to pledge $10,000 or $15,000. Promise them nothing, but do tell them that these exhibits will be operated at a little profit, and they will be paid back if it takes 4 or 5 years. I believe the Golden Valley or the city or whoever's making electricity can put their meters down there and measure the kilowatts they give them for the Centennial, and if it comes to $20,000, they can get it back little by little in a few years after the Centennial if we operate the park in a proper business-like manner. And so I hope it will help them to draw money. But a lot of people can't afford to give you a lot of money, but they can't afford to give you services. So I point this out to you. Now, the NC is a big company, and they ought to be able to do something for you. Maybe in a cash value, that's not for me to say. But I have this in mind. Weaver Brothers is a big company. Black Navigation Company is a big company. And doggone it, they can all work together and do something for you. Now, the NC has got a big tug down at St. Michael. Black Navigation and Weaver Brothers have got barges on the Yukon. They got towboats hauling freight from Nenana to Holy Cross, on down to St. Michael. As I see it, the proper way to get all this equipment out of Nome is to get a barge from some one of these outfits. Have it donated. It's part of their $30,000 you're asking each company to back up for to build a Centennial. See, it don't cost them anything. They can just dig up this old spare barge they're not using. Tow it over to Nome and up into Snake River and park it along the bank of the dock there at Nome. Put all your railroad steel on it. All the ties you can find. There might be a lot of barrels of spikes in one of those warehouses where I used to store them when I was fixing the railroad. There should be spike mauls there. There should be track gauges there for laying the track at the proper spacing. There should be old Jim Crow for bending the rail on curves. It looked something like that. And then there was a screw through here, and the rail laid through there, and the screw came onto it, and as you screwed the screw in through there, it bent the rail, gave it the curve you want. You've got to pick up a few switches. They're the old funny button type, just like that, you know. They're not the split type like they have nowadays. It's just one rail shoved over like that. But you need a few switches. You need the rail bender, you need the spike mauls, you need the track gauges, you need some hand cars, you need all these trucks I'm showing you here in this picture. If you go, you can take this set of trucks here now, and any carpenter around town can build you a nice bed, 20, 30, 40 feet long, and 6 or 8 nice seats on it, and tow it behind your little locomotive, and a little fringe on the top like a surrey if it's raining. And you can charge 25 cents, 50 cents from Cushman Street Bridge down and around through the park. And if this parking area down here gets active enough, you could even run down there and back every hour, pick up all the people here, old folks that don't want to walk, drop them around through here. You can have a little bridge across the river, across the lake or something. That's for you people to decide. But you've got tons of stuff in Nome that you want. And there's some old machinery over there that we should get for our Pioneer Park Board. Anyway, my subject, my idea is to get a barge over there and load it up. Have the NC tug tow it from Nome to St. Michael. They even go up as far as Holy Cross, I think. Then have Black Navigation bring it part of the way. Then have the U-10 barge bring it the rest of the way. And they can land it right at the edge of your property down here. Now, what's nicer than having all this steel and all this weight and all these car trucks and any other souvenirs? We found some old Russian cannon over at Candle. If we knew you were doing this, we'd try to get these cannon over to Nome so they could all come up river on the barge. And goodness knows what could you collect. Somebody ought to go to St. Michael. The old Russian blockhouse is down there. Maybe there's some Russian cannon around there. They could all be loaded on this barge, and it would be donated by these different companies. If they can't give you the money, don't have it, or don't want to write you out a big check for their donation, let them donate their services. And that's one way to get it here, by water, instead of flying it all. Here you've got to get it handled so many times. You've got to have trucks haul it to the airport. You've got to have men to load it in the airplanes. You got to have airplanes to fly it here. You got to have it unloaded. You got to haul it 3 miles from the airport to the site and unload it again. Here you can roll it on the barge and tie it up at the edge of your property and unload it. So that is my thought on the railroad. Now, Jim McDonald was over there for several weeks this fall and talked to Mike Walsh, the Walsh boy, and somebody else, and he has all the history of the present owner of a lot of this steel. There's an outfit in San Diego that bought this railroad, and they're moving all this steel down there to build another little Connerville trolley around some park, something like Berry's
Knott's Berry Farm.
But there's enough of it there for us too. We don't need so much. If the city, you got to go find out if the city would let you lay your ties right on top of the ground. You don't need to dig them in or fill them with gravel or anything. I would visualize from Cushman Street Bridge down to the park and back just for the year of the centennial and tear this part of it up or leave it there permanently if it proves a sufficient attraction. But we will write Jim McDonald and get the latest dope on these people and their names, and your committee can start negotiating with them for this deal. But that is my idea of how to get it over here.
There's a private company in San Diego, not old.
No, there's another man that got a contract from the government or somebody, and he's got 5 or 6 miles of steel there that he will give us for free. Has already offered it to the Pioneer Park.
That is also in Nome.
And that's in Nome. But there again, you would have to hire someone over there to dig it up and to haul it in and get it stacked to reach whatever method you anticipate getting it hauled over here. Then you should take the measurement of one of the ties that's over there if you want that standard tie, and you can cut native wood around here and make the ties. You may find barrel of spikes enough that you wouldn't have to buy railroad spikes. With these rails, you need the fish plates to go in between them. You could bolt the two together and bolts, and whether the warehouse of Don Lyle over there was in the shop and dished out most of this equipment to me all the years I was there, and he's still over there. And whether they've taken this all down to the city dump and thrown it away, I don't know. But there was barrels and spikes there and spike balls and fish plates. And as you tear up the railroad, I can name you every mile of the railroad, the name of every bridge and every culvert. And I drove over two or three times about 3 years ago. The highway goes right alongside of a great portion of it now. And then the highway goes on the west side of Salmon Lake, and the railroad goes on the east side, and I don't believe any of that has been torn up. But it would behoove you to figure out where your designers want this railroad and how many feet of it they need, and then go over there and get the rail. Now, whether you've got to buy a standard new Whatcom locomotive right out of a locomotive factory, which would be $15,000, $20,000, $30,000, I would assume, or whether you can go for something like this little Whitcomb locomotive that I've showed you a picture of, I don't know. That's for your people to investigate. And you have this little locomotive and a flat car behind it. We had just the old conventional flat car brake flex on all our standard railroads now that you wind up the wheel. And I had a brakeman that rode the flat car. I had it piled 4 feet high with ties and the full length of those cars, and they must be 24 feet long. And I took them up over Anvil Mountain and down the other side. True enough, I had to have a brakeman set on an apple box at the front end to wind up this brake and help brake me as I went down the other side of King Mountain, and help me all along the railroad wherever I had a little steep grade if I had to stop. But I had a good hand brake in the locomotive, and I didn't need it moving the crew cars. But as I say, standard safety procedures may holler for air brakes and a thousand other things that I can't even think of. So that's up to you people to look into. But I feel that over there is enough of these car trucks, and you wouldn't even need to bring the beds over here. You could make them over here. Goodness, there's not much to them. If that type of stuff is permissible to transport people in a centennial, or does it have to be standard in every possible way? Well, that's giving you about as close an insight into the entire thing up to date that I can think of. I will be, by the way, write me your full name and address and phone number, because as I say, I have to get together with this planning committee of our Pioneer Park Board and decide. We've got to come up with something in the way of what we want in the way of a museum building that we can turn it over to you people and have you adhere as closely as possible. So when you're done and gone, and we are carrying on from now on to eternity, we hope that it'll be the building that we can convert to what we want it for. And I will endeavor to get that those ideas to you as quick as I can after this cold spell gets over with, and tell you what we want in the way of it. You call it auditorium, we call it a museum.
We don't call it an auditorium. I haven't even heard that word yet until now.
Good. Well, I heard it the other night when we were talking down at our last Historical Society meeting. And something can be worked out of it between your committee and our committee to come up with some good idea, we hope. We do hope your outfit will get started working on Rusty Herlein and this mural. Because I think that's the most fabulous thing that we're going to have to display. And by the way, have you heard any more, that Century 21 had their Space Needle, Fairbanks wants a similar built object, only it would be a typical Alaskan cache. Now there's something for you to work on. That would be an ideal. You take the typical Alaskan cache that you see out around the trapper's cabin. Now, if you could make something like that out of steel and a restaurant in it, it would go over big, I think.
I hadn't heard that anybody particularly wanted to.
I've heard talk of it.
Space Needle.
Some steel company, they wanted to make the legs so they'd look like poles, and the typical Alaskan cache and the windows in it, and it would be a restaurant, the same as a restaurant on top of the Space Needle. You know, when we first, when this first group started drawing this plan, I'm showing you here, and a bunch of architects got together. One man was sure he knew RCA would come in with a wonderful big tall spire and all kinds of flashing lights on it, and someone else would come in with a wonderful spray fountain with 100 nozzles out of it. And oh, they just ran wild with ideas. But it's got to be adaptable to Alaska and the cold weather. But we certainly hope that we can have a wonderful mining display there. We hope we can have a wonderful transportation display, the railroads, the stagecoaches, the double-end sleds, the dog sleds. We hope that we can just load the park up with authentic early day and keep the souvenirs and frolics for the children outside the park. All these concessions are as much as possible is my personal idea on it. Now, have you anything to say? I've been talking pretty steady.
Well, I'll just make a few comments. First, as I indicated earlier, fundamentally what I came to see you about is that we do want to get an idea of what you have in mind. When I say you, I mean the pioneers.
That's right.
And the reason we want to know this is because you're the ones that are going to operate the thing when the centennial is all over. However, there are many of these things that we've talked about here, which it is very good for us to know about them.
Good.
But nevertheless, may not have any direct part in the centennial.
That's right. I appreciate that. Yeah.
For example, I think this 1898 cabin type thing is splendid, and I presume that we ought to have something like that. But let's just use that as an
mm-hmm.
example.
Mm-hmm.
If something like that weren't created in the centennial, of course, it in no way inhibits you and the active people and the pioneers and the historical societies to go about and construct it on their own.
Oh, yeah, later on. That's
even
right.
Later on,
that's
or right. Even
even for the centennial.
Even for the centennial.
That's right.
Because
there's
about, I've forgotten what the acreage is here, but it's considerably more acreage than we probably need.
Yes.
The entire Century 21 was located on less than twice the acreage that you have.
Hmm.
In fact, perhaps not much more than 1.5.
Well, that reminds me. That reminds me of one thing I want to put to you now. I want to leave with you. I want all your people to know about. This is, again, I presume, a personal desire. But I'm going to point it out to you anyway. And if it materializes, that's fine. If it don't, well, then it just couldn't be. But when we started in on this, we visualized the home there south of the road and a lot of old-timers that would want to help us. And we had to have a place for them to work. So at that time, I was trying to get a hold of one of these surplus buildings off of Ladd or Eielson. Not the Quonset hut, but one of the regular wooden frame buildings. They're 25, 30 feet wide and 40, 50 feet long. I wanted one down in the northwest corner of the park. Right down close to the river, the main gate would be up here, and this would be hid with trees. I wanted one of those places for these old timers. I wanted some nice workbenches in there, vices. Because, you know, I could visualize putting an old dog sled in here, or an old stagecoach that needed new seat, new wood, new spokes in the wheels, or an old whatnot that we could fall air to. We'd have to put it in there where we could have a couple of potbelly stoves, and some hand tools, so these old-timers that wanted to could walk down there and work on these things.
Oh, I think something like that you should have.
Now, when I first heard this here thing was going to maybe develop, now, right then I thought, now these contractors are going to be building this building and this building and this site and this site. They're going to put up a temporary headquarters like every contractor does when he starts to build the Northwood building or the Polaris building. He's got a big office down on the edge of the street. Build us, acquire for us your big office where all your architects and your meetings and your consultation groups can meet and all your blueprints will be kept and some of your equipment. But build it off in the corner, out of the way, and build it good because that's what we will want it for when you're done, is this workshop. We'll have all kinds of old furniture, old broken tables, old broken stoves, old sleds, mining equipment, and we want a place in out of the cold where these old-timers can go and file it and scratch on it and rub the rust off and paint it and get it ready to put out on display. And we've got to have a little workshop. So whatever part of the park that you decide to put your contractor's headquarters for during the building of the park, put it down there in the corner and put a good foundation under it so we can live in it. These old timers can work in it from then on. And everything that's left over from the building, if there's a keg of nails or half a load of 2x4s, we want it down there for them. And that's one thought that I wanted to leave with you people. When you do build your office building, keep us in mind and make a couple of big doors on it and make it kind of deep. So if all I can get an old automobile in there that we want to put in, good. Goodness knows that we've been offered a tremendous amount of stuff, and the sooner we got a place to put it, it's going to take a lot of what I'd call them patios around through the park. Something to keep the rain and snow off of these things, and yet they're open on all four sides so you can have a nice stagecoach setting there or whatnot. Well, I guess that brings it to a conclusion then. For our first meeting, I'll be happy to work with you in any way I can, and if I can come up with any good ideas in the future, I'll give them to you. Here's one I'll leave with you, and I will write to McDonald, Jim McDonald. You can write him yourself and ask him for this latest dope on ownership of the railroad. It's Jim McDonald, Hoona, Alaska, in care of the Radio RCA. That's all the address you need. Now, if some part of your group would be interested in putting one exhibit on this ground that would be a typical early day saloon, and that, I imagine, could sell soft drinks and liquors during the centennial, and have it, so to speak, we would be competing with Cripple Creek out here, I guess, on that score. But we have heard where down here in Southeastern, there's an old abandoned town. Jim McDonald will tell you about it. And it has an old abandoned saloon in it. The rail, the back rail, the mirrors, the cuspidors, everything, just the way they went away and left it. Now, if you've got a group that's interested in rescuing that and bring it up and put it in a typical Alaskan saloon like the Red Dog, the 1901 saloon that was in Fairbanks, and I imagine it would be a good refreshment deal. There may be old tables and chairs and everything there, and it's something that could stay there forever.
How does Jim McDonald spell his last name? M.C. or M.H.?
M.C.
Now, Hoona, Alaska.
Hoona's down in Southeastern. He was over at Nome on the Dew Line site over there for a while, and now he's down at a station at Hoona, and we're trying to get him transferred up here to Murphy Dome or Cherry Summit because he's one of our best and hardest workers, and we hope to get him back up in this neighborhood again. He's the one that did so much of the work on acquiring this ground, this extra 60-acre parking lot, and we hope to get him back up here. But he was over known for several weeks, and he talked to everybody over there about this railroad and sent me these pictures. And
well, he knows the name of the people who bought.
Yes, he will give you, it's a Martin, I think, but I can't give you the initials, and I don't want to give you any part of it because I may be wrong.
Does he also know what they bought?
He wrote a letter to Earl Weisslein. I'm sure Earl would have the information now that you would be writing Mac for. But I would like you to write Mac as a personal favor to me, introducing yourself and telling what station in this overall picture you are commanding, so we can funnel things to you in the future that you should know about. That would be my desire. And with that, I will close out the tape.
The voices that you have heard have been that of Jim Cassidy, who was speaking on behalf of A67 in its planning stages, apparently. And the second voice was that of Les Rogers, who became site manager of A67, and who is a partner in the firm of Gray, Rogers, and Cotting architectural people. And this A67 came to pass. It was unfortunately flooded out on August the 14th, 1967. Mr. James Cassidy was the president of the Tanana Yukon Historical Society for the year of 1966 and was always active in civic affairs and was very much interested in the pioneers of Alaska and their that sort of first people. And he passed away July 3rd, 1967. Today, speaking on behalf of the A67 exposition, apparently, and the second voice was that of Les Rogers, site manager. Rogers is one of the partners in the architectural firm of Gray, Rogers, and Cotting, who designed the A67 buildings. And Rogers, as I said, was site manager there.